Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
It's been an exciting week for Stratford University. We opened up classes at our new Virginia Beach campus this
week. Good.
And the building just looks beautiful. Everybody's very happy with that facility. And now we're working on our new campus in Alexandria. We'll be opening up there in March of 2014. So we've been doing space planning on that. So a little bit of movement for Stratford, and we always enjoy offering our courses in a new location. And it's been a very busy week in technology. Things are just happening all over the place. And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Tremendously big.
There's
a letter
in your mailbox.
Oh, it's really hard to get
these letters up here. You should probably drop it before.
These are really the heaviest emails I've ever had to carry.
We need an assistant now.
Yeah,
it's getting to be so much work.
They really are. We do. We need an assistant. Dr. You know, Mr. Big Voice being unionized, he won't lift a finger.
Folds his arm, walks into the corner.
So we got an email from Tom Laird on LinkedIn. He was one of my LinkedIn connections.
Ah.
Hi, Dr. Schertz. I'm a longtime listener and lover of your Tech Talk Classroom of the Internet radio show. I discovered it on Federal News Radio online several years back, maybe 2007. I've really appreciated it ever since. It's cool. But please explain to Jim and David why LinkedIn is the best platform for B2B and that Facebook and Pinterest are for B2C. Okay, don't they get that? I'm trying to think, when have we talked about this?
Well, I don't know that I've ever expressed an interest in Pinterest or the other
platform. It is true. LinkedIn is actually great for business applications. I'm a very big LinkedIn user. We use it for recruiting, and it's extremely effective in that regard. I'm not really much of a Facebook guy.
I've
got a Facebook account because we need it for Stratford just to show a presence, but it is really not my cup of tea. And I think business to consumer, Facebook and Pinterest probably, and actually Stratford, we do use those for B2C, but we do a lot of our recruiting on LinkedIn, so that would be kind of a business application. Also, what is the name of David's walk-in theme song again? Do tell.
Should I answer that question?
Yes, you should answer that.
That is by a current popular recording artist, I use the words in quotes, named Kesha.
Kesha?
S is replaced by a dollar sign, and the song is called TikTok, spelled TikTok. So if he's going to rush off to iTunes and get that song, that's what
there
he's
you
for.
Go. Okay.
Kesha.
Keep up your great and always informative Tech Talk shows. I'm pretty busy these days with my visual content, infographics, and mobile marketing business, so I don't often get to listen live these days. But the recordings I catch up on are always excellent. Keep delivering that worthwhile content, and thanks for joining my LinkedIn network.
That's very kind.
Sincerely, Tom Laird. That was a great email. Loved that. Well, we really do enjoy hearing from our listeners. We got an email from Lauren in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, I have Verizon Fios Internet only with no TV or phone. My Internet connection is not working, and they replaced my router. The Verizon instructions ask me to put the Verizon CD to configure my system, but I've got an iMac and no CD drive. Is there a way I can configure this thing without using the Verizon software and CD? I sure hope so. Do you believe that this new router will solve my problem? Help is most appreciated. Best wishes, Lauren. Well, I think if it's a hardware problem and not your fiber connection, then this should fix it. Now, actually, you don't need a CD to configure it. I don't like to use that configuration CD because they load programs on your computer. It turns out that your computer is probably already configured to use the router because you basically use DHCP, Dynamic Host configuration protocol, DHCP, and that just simply requests the router to download the IP address, your computer's internal IP address, and also the gateway address. It also downloads the any other address information is needed, and your computer is still set up to do that. So you can actually handle that. Now the router should come already configured with an admin password, and you've got a Wi-Fi password. It's probably on a tag that's stuck on the back of your router. So what you're going to have to do, you've now got a different Wi-Fi password. So any of your computers that are wirelessly connected to the router, when you actually connect them to the wireless Wi-Fi connection, it's going to ask you for the password. You're going to have to put in a new password. And I believe that's all you're going to have to do. They already have an administrative password on your router. Now, I'll tell you what I did, though. I mean, my router came with passwords that they had pre-assigned. I changed them all. I didn't like having mm-hmm. pre-assigned passwords. So I actually went in, I logged onto my router, and you can log on 192.168.1.1 would be the address, and you can log on to it, and it's a web page, and you can put in the admin password and username that are printed on that back label and log into it. And you can change the password to the router. You can also change your Wi-Fi password if you want, but you really don't have to. So I think you should be good to go. And actually, I never use that configuration CD. We got an email from Margaret. Dear Doc Schertz, thank you for providing your audience with content worth hearing and coming back to weekly. I really don't know what's going on with my home page. It keeps changing back to Yahoo search after I've set it to Google. What have I done? It keeps coming back. Is this Yahoo hardwired into my computer? What's going on? I've got an iMac, and sometimes I get a colored spinning wheel, and then I've got to restart the computer. Thanks, Margaret, who have not quite mastered the iMac. Well, Margaret, your browser homepage is being hijacked. Now, you could have downloaded some new software and installed a toolbar. It turns out if you happen to install the Yahoo add-on, it will reset it to your Yahoo homepage every time you turn the browser on and off. So I'd get rid of any toolbar extensions. More than likely, that's what you've done. Now, I'd also scan your computer for spyware. Sometimes spyware will do that. But more than likely, it is a toolbar that you downloaded. As far as that spinning item goes, that indicates that your computer is having some processing problem. Huh. Like it could be it's having trouble getting data from your hard drive. That might be an indication of something where it's having trouble reading a program. So I would probably go in and do a. I would take on my hard drive. I might do a, go scan the hard drive. There are programs to scan the hard drive. You can actually defragment the hard drive. I would go through some of those processes to see whether that might be the problem. It might be looking for a program in your configuration that doesn't exist anymore. So, that might be an indication of a problem, but I'd probably go back and scan the hard drive, I'd defrag the hard drive to see whether that is going to fix the problem. But I think getting rid of that Yahoo page should be quite easily done. So get back to me to see if any of those ideas work. We got an email from Jim in Maryland. Dear Tech Talk, you made a mistake last week.
Uh-oh,
Jim. Okay, Jim is the guy that's always going to tell me about my mistakes. You deleted... You said that if you add a comment to somebody else's homepage, you can't delete it. Well, you are wrong. You can delete the comment from somebody else's homepage. I still love the show, but try to keep the information perfect and don't make any more mistakes.
Yeah, well, keep it perfect, Doc.
That's right. Well, thanks, Jim. You're really hard on me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, Jim, you are correct. When you post something to somebody else's homepage. After you've posted it, there's a small symbol. It looks like a V, and it's very light gray in the upper right-hand corner. You click on that V, and a little drop-down menu will come down, and you'll have a choice where you can either edit the post or delete the post. And that same little light V is on the mobile platform as well as on the PC version of Facebook. So Actually, Jim, I went back and I posted something to somebody else's homepage. I just said, this is a test post. Please forgive me. And then I went back and I used the inverted. I clicked on it both from my mobile phone as well as from my laptop, and I was able to edit it as and then finally delete it. So, Jim, I have to accept full responsibility for that error. But
wow.
Thank you for noticing that. We got an email from Ron in McLean. Dear Dr. Schertz, as a longtime weekly listener from all the way back to your WJFK days and an admirer of both your technical and scientific knowledge and entrepreneurial success, I've never gone wrong applying your suggested solutions to insolvable problems. Now I've got another one. Okay, I run my own companies, and I've got my own company, and I'm running legacy software using Windows 7 running in the XP mode. I've got Windows 7 Professional. And because this legacy software will only run in XP, it's not going to run in Windows 7, I've got to run the virtual XP machine within Windows 7. Now my problem is that Microsoft is going to retire Windows XP April of 2014. Now that means there will be no further security updates. How's that going to affect me? I mean, I wonder if could I get some continuing updates over time to keep this up to date, or what are my options? Well, actually, you can probably continue running the XP version, Ron. Now, here's the problem: 37% of the installed base of operating systems happens to be Windows XP globally. And there's a lot of XP installed in China and the Asian countries. It's very popular, and there's going to continue to be a large installed base because XP is a very popular operating system. What's going to happen, because that's a huge target, as soon as they stop giving security updates, the hackers are going to go for them. And anytime they do a security update for, say, Windows 7 or Windows 8, the hackers are going to reverse engineer that update to see whether the vulnerability that's being fixed is also a vulnerability that occurs in Windows XP. And chances are, in many cases, it is. So you can expect to see quite a few XP exploits out there. Now, how are they going to get to your computer? They're either going to go through the Internet, which would be the common way, or they're going to go through a thumb drive. You know, that's how the Stuxnet virus got into the centrifuges there in Iran, through thumb drives. So my advice to you would be to, if you want to run in the XP mode, this legacy software, do not surf the web while you're in the XP mode. Just stay off the Internet. If you don't go on the Internet, none of these viruses really matter. And I would also make certain that you don't put a thumb drive in your computer while you're in the XP mode. And if you don't put a thumb drive in your computer while you're in the XP mode, and if you don't get on the Internet while you're in the XP mode, if all you're doing is running your legacy software, you're going to be safe. It's not really a problem.
It's a lot to remember, though.
I know. Well, you just stay in isolation. You just pull the plug, and then people can't get to you. That's really how it is.
Go under the radar.
Now, and I got a couple of other suggestions for you. I would recommend that you back up your virtual server. So suppose the worst happens and you just get infected, and then you'd like to then fix it. You can back up the files that are just specifically used by this virtual machine within Windows 7. And you can go to Microsoft support, and it gives you their four or five files. You've got to get the exact path, and there's two of them are an XML file. And it's a little bit complicated, but you can do that. But there's an easier way to back up just the XP version of your system. There's a program called XP-More, and it will make backup of the virtual machines very easy. You don't have to edit any of the XML files. You can just do it. And so just you can get XP Moore for at xpmoorecodex.com. And so I will post this this link, or you can just search for XP Moore, and you can find it. That's what how I would recommend that you would actually actually back it up. But I have to tell you, there are people that are still running Windows 95, and they've been running Windows 95 for years, and they don't have any problem. Mm-hmm. They just don't go on the internet. There are also a lot of embedded operating system, XPs, and a lot of embedded systems. It's going to continue running. So I don't think you're going to have any problems at all. Now, but just be careful and stay offline. We got an email from Rachel in Lorton. Dear Tech Talk, I've got an HP computer that came with 8 gigabytes of RAM. It'll take up to 16. And so the thing is, I could put 16 gigs of RAM in it, but I have to take the 2 4-gig cards and throw them away and put in 2 8-gigs because I only have 2 slots, and both slots are used by the 4 gigs. Do you think it's worthwhile to do that? Now, I've already optimized my machine with a solid-state drive, and it's made a big difference. Thanks, Rachel in Lorton. Well, whether or not you need more RAM really depends on how you're using your computer. I mean, the solid-state drive was a good idea, and that would give you some real speed addition. But probably, in most likelihood, 8 gigabytes is enough. You see, if you've got a 32-bit machine, you can only address 4 gigs. So I'm assuming that you've got a 64-bit machine, which could address more than 4 gigs. And the only time you would use that additional RAM would be if you'd have, say, giant images, or you'd have giant spreadsheets. You want to dump the whole giant, 4 or 5 gigabyte file into RAM while you were operating on it. So it's possible you could use it if you had some applications with giant files, and you just get quicker speed if you put it all in RAM, then you don't have to swap back and forth to the hard drive. Now, in fact, at Stratford, we run virtual machines a lot. So we're in the classroom. If we're running two or three virtual machines in parallel, each virtual machine would like to have 4 gigs. So if you're running multiple virtual machines, you in fact could use more than 8 gigabytes of RAM if you're doing that. So it depends on your usage. It sounds to me, Rachel, that you're not doing either one of those things just based on your email. What you could do is you could run the Process Explorer, and then while you're in Process Explorer, hit Control-I, and then you'll get a summary. And that'll give you the memory usage, and just see whether your memory usage is close to 8 gigs. And if it's always far below the 8-gig limit, just forget it. You're fine for now, and getting more RAM won't help you a bit at all. Well, I'm telling you, we love all your emails.
Absolutely do.
So you want to email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. And I'm also, by the way, monitoring the Facebook page. If you have any comments during the show, simply go to facebook.com/techtalkonline.
You are listening to the Classroom of the Airwaves, Tech Talk Radio, coming to you from the studios of WFED, Federal News Radio in Washington, D.C. You can hear us on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, and, of course, FederalNewsRadio.com. We'll be back with more right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. It's time. Time to take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, it's time to be more.
as an example of how quickly things change in technology. The following segment aired initially on November 24th, 2007.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk, and now it's time for...
N-I-G.
Or something like that.
Oh, that kind of
That's
blues.
Profiles. Yeah. Let's try that again.
Profiles N-I-G.
There we go.
There we go. That's better.
That's the full Monty.
Better.
Yeah.
Mr. Big Voice was not in the studio.
he had a mouthful of turkey and
That's
lumpy gravy,
right.
I think.
Well, this week we're talking about Jeffrey Preston Bezos. He, of course, is the founder and president and chief executive officer and chairman of the board of Amazon.com. A very big mouthful. He was born January 12, 1964, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Bezos was born when his mother, Jackie Bezos, was still... in her teens. Her marriage to her father lasted only a year.
To her father? Oh, his father.
To his father, yeah. her marriage to his father lasted a little
Kentucky,
more than a year.
Oh, New right. Mexico, that's different,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
She remarried when Bezos was five. Bezos' stepfather, Miguel Bezos, was born in Cuba.
That would be Miguel.
I think that's Miguel.
Miguel,
yeah.
Miguel Bezos was born in Cuba. He migrated to the U.S. when he was 15, and he worked his way through the University of Albuquerque. At an early age, Jeffrey Bezos exhibited a striking mechanical aptitude. When he was a toddler, he dismantled his crib with a screwdriver.
Yep, that's a sign.
That's a sign that there's something going on. Bezos showed intense interest in science. He rigged an electric alarm to keep his younger siblings out of his room to maintain his secrecy.
Oh.
You know, you don't know what he's up to. He converted his parents' garage into a laboratory for his science projects. He spent most of his... I guess his dad just had to park the cars out in the driveway.
I would, too, yeah.
He spent most of his summers of his youth working with his grandfather on the family's 25,000-acre Texas ranch. I've got a picture here of Bezos with some of the farm animals up at the top.
That's not the most impressive-looking house behind
him. I think that's like maybe the...
An outhouse or something.
I don't think that's a house where he lived. Bezos attended River Oaks Elementary School in Houston from the 4th to the 6th grade. Then his family moved to Miami, Florida, where he attended the Miami Palmetto Senior High School. He entered Princeton shortly thereafter, and he planned to study physics. So he's kind of a man after my own thinking. But then he dropped that because he was interested in computers, and he graduated with a degree from Princeton in computer science and electrical engineering. After graduating, Bezos worked on Wall Street in the computer science field. He built a network for an international trading company known as Fattel. Later on, Bezos also worked for a company, D.E. Shaw, in the computer science department. In 1994, he founded Amazon.com and became one of the most prominent dot-com entrepreneurs. You know, Amazon named after the biggest river in the world because this, of course, was the biggest bookstore in the world. Bezos was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year in 1999. His 2006 salary was $81,000, unchanged since 1998, plus $1.1 million in other benefits. Must be like an airplane or something. Bezos' wealth is primarily derived from his holdings of Amazon.com stock. At the end of 2006, he held over 100 million shares of common stock, representing 24.26% of all of Amazon.com. At today's current price, I just checked the newspaper this morning, at $81 per share, he's now worth $8.1 billion. That is Jeffrey Preston Bezos.
That's amazing.
And he actually was a man with a vision.
A vision, and he pulled himself up by his own bootstraps.
He certainly did.
Yep. That's a great story.
It is.
Amazon's come up with this new product here that we're going to talk about. It's almost like an iPod for books, right?
It's an iPod for books. This is the Amazon's Kindle. It's actually an e-book reader. It's got SD memory. It will hold up to 200 books,
wow.
200 e-books. And this is a direct competitor of Sony's Reader. They both use a very innovative display technology called e-ink display technology that looks almost paper-like. You look at it, it doesn't look like a liquid crystal display. It looks like a piece of paper. It looks very paper-like, so it's easy. It's easy on the eye, easy to read. It also uses not very much power. You can use just on one battery charge, you can read an entire book, World and Peace, and not run out of battery power, because it's a very low-power display, and so it's extremely efficient. He basically wants to reinvent the way books are distributed, and he thinks that he's got a solution here. Now, it's kind of kludgy. It's version 1.0. It hasn't gotten great reviews because it's kind of awkward to use. Some of the scrolls are...
How do you get the book in the reader? What kind of a download is involved here?
What he has, it has built into it, it's downloaded through Sprint's EVDO cellular network. That's their third-generation network. And built into this machine is actually a cell phone. And you will call Amazon.com through the cell phone, and you will surf through the Amazon.com web and homepage, and then you'll find the book you want, and you'll download it directly to your reader.
That's fascinating.
Now, the interesting thing is Amazon is paying for the cell phone call. You don't have a phone number.
Well,
you don't even know you have a phone number.
Mr. Bezos is worth $8.1 billion. I think he can afford the call.
So what he's doing, he's figuring that he'll make enough money just on, and so he's embedded the cost of the cell phone call in the downloaded cost of the ebook. So you don't, it's not like you have to buy a cell phone. Now, the beauty of this means that you can log on and buy a book anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere you can make a phone call, you can log on to the Amazon.com site, and you can download a book. He calls that the Amazon WhisperNet. And it's actually a very, very clever way to do it. Now, the interesting thing is, we want to compare, since we're kind of comparing Sony and the Sony Reader with the Amazon Kindle. If you have a Sony book, you basically have to pay $16 to download a book for your Sony Reader, whereas the Amazon is downloading books for $9.95.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to decide whether you like the whole ebook idea. Now, it also has a USB connection if you'd like to download your book to your computer. Suppose you download a bunch of books on your machine and then you lose it or it breaks. Amazon keeps track of all the books you've purchased, and you can download them again.
Oh, that's
because
great.
You basically own it. You can download it as many times as you want because you own that book.
Have you seen the Sony Reader?
No, I have not seen the Sony Reader.
I got to ask something, just because it's obvious and it's just screaming out at me. What is the difference between, the huge price difference between book downloads for the Sony and for the Amazon? I mean, $9.99, people are going to look at that and say, well, why would I choose the Sony then if that's the case? Mm-hmm. Is there a difference in the terms of in the actual price of the readers itself? Like, is the Amazon readers?
Amazon's expensive, $400. I think the main reason is that the Kindle's part of the Amazon system, and they're using it. Amazon tries to sell things lower cost. This is another distribution channel for Amazon. That's what they look at it as.
Okay.
Now, the trouble is that it's very clunky. It's got a bad interface. But, people are saying, look, this is their first stab at it. It's version 1.0.
Right. Sure.
The initial version of the iPhone wasn't that good, and they had to go through a couple of iterations. So they're saying, give the guy a chance. I think it's too expensive. $400 for this thing?
That's a lot.
It's way too expensive. But at least Amazon's not getting a kickback from the phone companies for the phone call.
Right.
They're picking up the total phone cost.
Or at least rolling it into the cost of the book so that it's...
So that it's
not completely,
Yeah. That's exactly right. So it's I would not get the version 1.0 of this. I'd wait around. But the question is, are they going to reinvent how people read books?
So there you have it. Jeff Bezos of Amazon and the Kindle e-reader certainly did change the way that we read books. In fact, looking at the Sony website, they don't even sell an e-reader anymore. Hope you were paying attention. Coming up in just a moment, your chance to win free food from us by showing us your knowledge and the fact that you've been listening to us here on Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM, HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
It's time. time to put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. It's time. Time to take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, it's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here.
And I would be that aforementioned guy right here. My name is Jim Russ. I'm the adjunct professor for messing things up and for lowering academic standards on Tech Talk Radio. We just finished talking about Jeffrey Preston Bezos, he of Amazon, the Kindle, and now the owner of the Washington Post. At a very young age, he started to display his technical aptitude by dismantling this item with a screwdriver. If you can tell me what that item was, you'll win tickets for two for fine dining on the campus of Stratford University in Falls Church at the Escoffier at Stratford University, or on the campus in Woodbridge at Cafe Karim. In order to get that answer to us, pick up the phone right now. Call us if you're calling from west of Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's 877-936-9333. Calling from east of Houston, Texas, 877-936-9333. And, of course, everyone else can call us on the wild card line, 877-936-9333. The Pop Quiz on Tech Talk Radio.
Now, let's get to turkey. Let's talk. Okay, we've talked enough technology. Let's talk turkey. Now, I brought in my food science book, On Food and Cooking, The Art and Science and Lore of the Kitchen, Harold McGee. I love this book. This is the old edition, the old hardback edition of the book. He came out with a newer edition, but this one is really my trusty Bible. So whenever I get enough playing around at the computer, I go in there and play in the kitchen. That's why we've got a culinary school at Stratford as well as a... As well as a computer school. And let's talk about, first of all, let's talk about cooking your turkey. Now, there's a problem when you cook a turkey, and that's that the dark meat has to cook longer than the white meat, because the dark meat is not tender until it breaks down, because it has so many tendons and cartilage in it that actually has to break down in order for the dark meat to be tender, and that means it has to cook longer.
And you don't want to overcook the white meat in the process, which has a tendency to kind of dry.
That's right. So if you cook it so that the dark meat is perfect, the white meat is too dry. And if the white meat is perfect, the dark meat's underdone. This is the problem. So Harold McGee applied science to this problem. And what he does, he takes the turkey out of the refrigerator. It's already thawed. A couple of hours before, he puts it into the oven. And he puts a bag of ice on the breast, on the top of the turkey, it's breast side up. And he lets it sit for a couple of hours. So the bottom of the turkey heats up to room temperature. The top of the turkey stays at around 40 degrees Fahrenheit.
And
so when he puts it into the oven, there's a temperature differential across the turkey. And that temperature differential means that it takes longer for the white meat to warm up and start cooking. And that time difference allows you to equalize the cooking time for the two sides of the turkey.
If you're in a hurry, could you maybe just hit the breast with a can of Freon or something like that?
Possibly you could try that. Although,
shaking your head.
The environmentalists are going to get you.
I was going to say Freon.
Environmentally friendly Freon.
So,
I'm only using that.
You mean you spray Freon around your...
I use it as an air freshener.
They're going to be getting you. Okay, now let's turn to the nemesis of Thanksgiving.
Lumpy, and that is lumpy gravy.
Lumpy gravy.
I can think of a few other. Nemesis.
Yes.
There's nothing worse. There's nothing worse than having the...
Nemesis.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. We need to go to dictionary.com to find that out.
Yeah, we'll have to do that.
Yeah, some off the air.
You know, there's nothing worse than you have the perfect meal, the perfect turkey, everything's perfect, and then you have lumpy gravy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real issue. It is a real problem.
It could cause a fight.
Well, I studied the science of gravy. And
you're a noted graviologist.
I've got a few markers in my book here. Now, as you know, you thicken gravy with flour,
right?
Typically, or cornstarch,
but not an ice pack.
No, that's for the breast. No, not an ice patch. And the thickening, flour, of course, is composed, when you grind flour, it's composed of two parts. It's composed of the protein, which is sort of the wheat germ where all the genetic material is, talking about genes. And then you've got surrounding the genetic material or the wheat germ, you've got this, food, the carbohydrate material, or the starch. And so when the seed starts growing, the starch basically provides the first nutrients for the new seed. It turns out that the thing which is critical to thickening gravy is the carbohydrate part of the flour. If you grind flour and remove the protein or the wheat germ, you're left with just flour, starch, as opposed to pure flour.
Right.
But frequently they'll do that with corn, where they'll remove the protein or the wheat or the genetic material of the corn, and you're left with corn starch. It's the corn starch or the wheat starch that's actually used for thickening. And it turns out, you see, that when you take and put the starch in water and you heat it up, that when you reach a critical temperature, the starch begins to react with the water, and it expands very quickly. And the point where it expands depends on what you have. Like if you're using wheat flour, the expansion occurs between 140 and 148 degrees Fahrenheit. If you use corn starch, it's between 144 and 158 degrees Fahrenheit. So as soon as you throw that in, it expands and pops up. Now, it expands and immediately thickens, so it looks thin until you reach that transition
point. And then all of a sudden, bang.
And it gets, so, you know, people start adding more and more flour, and then it finally gets too thick.
And it's like cement.
Yeah, it's like cement.
Turkey-flavored cement.
Now, if your water is above that transition point and you throw in more flour, you get lumps. Because the flour goes in there, and you get this gelatinous material on the outside of that flour blob, and that's a big lump. And so you don't want to throw in flour into the hot water.
The key word is patience.
Now you might say, well, suppose I get it and it's already hot, and now I need to add a little bit more flour. How can I do that? You can add that using something called a roux.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is you take flour and butter and mix it together as a paste. And now the flour has been separated by the butter, and you put in maybe 50-50. And then you can throw in a pinch of roux, and since the flour is already separated, it will not lump. So you use roux, a mixture of butter and flour, if you are above the transition point, and you will not get lumpy gravy.
And roux actually comes in different types depending on how long you cook it. There's a blonde roux, there's darker roux, and you use roux in all kinds of things. But that's another show for another day.
And that's R-O-U-X.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, heard in the Washington area, over the broadcast airwaves on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM, HD2, on the internet worldwide at techtalkonline.com. More of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Set your own pay. If you are ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management covers the skills to launch your business, from writing a solid business plan to financing, branding, and marketing. Choose from our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. Contact us today at stratford.edu. Stratford University, it's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is Tech Talk Radio.
We're having fun with all of our toys here in the studio.
Yeah, we sure are. We have a return visit from the blimp.
Oh, yeah. Let me get my blimp going here. Last week, I didn't get the blimp operating right. I've got a micro blimp here. It's got a three-channel. I can go up and down. I can go forward. I can spin the thing around. It's about 20 inches long, filled with helium. It operates on a 900 megahertz radio signal. I've been flying this blimp around the house all week.
You have, and I've picked a special song for you, too.
Oh. Oh, yeah, that's perfect. Oh, yeah, I love that. Look at this. You know, the thing that I didn't realize... Flying the blimp in the studio, there is so much hot air in the studio that I can hardly control blimp.
It's amazing.
The blimp keeps wanting to go over to the, there's an air return, which is pulling out all hot air, and the blimp keeps wanting to go over to that air return, and I'll tell you, I have to fly away from that part of the studio.
You have to fight it. Well, you've got to understand, folks, this blimp looks like a Mylar balloon, maybe a little bigger than you'd get at the grocery store, a happy birthday type balloon. And the guts, which hang, you turn it on its side, the guts for this thing are, it's smaller than a credit card.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little, but it sounds big.
I've got two motors here, my thrust motors, and then I've got two propellers that are for thrust. I got another propeller that's for going up and down. This is a micro blimp. You can get. I think you just look up micro blimp. I got it from ThinkGeek.com. Mm-hmm. I mean, probably more than I should have spent. But
I'm looking for it now, so maybe.
ThinkGeek.
We'll get
some, okay. Yeah, I think I spent $120 for this guy.
Oh. Okay, now I'm not as interested.
I know. But I've just had so much fun with it.
Oh, this is cool. Hang on.
And then, but the biggest thing is you've got to put counterweights on it, and as the helium comes out of the thing, you know, the counterweights drop out.
Hey, so, Doc.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a different one. I found one for $54.
Okay.
And they got one that looks like the Goodyear blimp for the same price.
Okay, well, maybe I didn't do enough blimp research.
This doesn't look as... yours has these great controls side to side, up and down.
Plus mine is radio controlled.
Yes.
It's 900 megahertz. It's not IR controlled, so I don't have to worry about pointing it.
This thing that I found has different propulsion system. I'm interested in the Goodyear blimp.
Yeah, this one is. It's taken me a long time to learn how to operate this thing. But I'll tell you, this year has been the year of the toys for me. I have radio controlled blimp. I have two helicopters. I've got one, a conventional helicopter with counter-rotating blades so I can adjust the trim.
Yeah, we broke that one.
I know. Well, I have another one. I've had to go through two of those helicopters. I got another helicopter called Blade Star where the whole thing spins. That's a little more stable. Then I've got a little remote control car at home, which is a 28 megahertz car. It's a little Mini Cooper. And then I brought in my robotic beetle.
Yeah, it's down there, my robotic beetle.
You turn this thing on.
Let's do this here.
You know, I've decided.
I'm not piperated on the beetle yet.
Yeah, no, well, you know, there's that little black switch out the back.
Whoops, I killed him.
On the tail.
It goes horizontal.
I
see it.
There you go.
That's what he sounds like.
Yeah,
let's let him walk on the control board and see what happens.
Okay.
He's not liking that a lot.
I don't think so.
He's going to walk over. He's going to walk over.
Oh yeah, he's
going to.
Oh
comes.
Yeah, now he's coming over here.
He's going to slide off the board. Oh, he's on his back.
He's on his back. He's got these. Antenna, and you touch the antenna, and then he turns in a different direction. Got a little microprocessor in it. It's kind of cute. I don't know what it is. This year, I just really became fascinated with all of these toys.
Because you decided you don't want to grow up. That's what it is.
I know. I've had a lot of fun.
Oh, okay.
Last year, I bought the, I was building robots. I got the Mindstorm, the Lego Mindstorm set. I was putting together robots. I really think if you want to get your kids interested in technology, get them something where they can do some programming like the Mindstorm robot, something like that. And not just get into games.
Well,
get something
it,
where they learn something.
This makes it fun. And I found your blimp on the web, and it says the perfect gift for your 32-year-old child.
There you go.
There it
this
is.
This thing is tons of fun. The only problem I've got is you can't take it outdoors.
No.
Because it would wind up at the sun in about 30 seconds.
No, you cannot. You cannot take this thing upstairs at all.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, heard in the Washington area, over the broadcast airwaves on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2, on the internet worldwide at techtalkonline.com. More of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. It's time. Time to take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, it's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. You're in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford. Actually, we're in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. And, you know, I'm just sick and tired of people that are always on their cell phone. You ever had that problem? You'll be there in the, you know, trying to do some studying or do some reading, and there's some guy right beside you talking on the cell phone, just on and on and on and on. Or you're in the elevator, somebody's talking on the cell phone. It can just be quite annoying. Or probably the worst would be at a restaurant. You're sitting at a restaurant trying to have a nice leisurely meal, and the guy beside you's talking some stock trade deal on the cell phone.
You don't want to hear about it.
No, you know, wouldn't it be nice if you could just have a battery powered cell phone jammer, and you just open up your briefcase and you just turn this little jammer on, and anybody within 30 feet of you, their cell phone is jammed, and it shows that their cell phone doesn't know it's jammed. It just says they don't have a signal. Wouldn't that be so convenient? Well, there.
But. There are some problems with this.
Yeah, it's against the law.
Let's
get to that. Let's do the fun start first. We'll get to the legal part later on.
Yeah, who really cares about the legal part?
Yeah, who really cares about it? And so the thing is, you can go to www.phonejammer.com, phonejammer.com, and they've got a portable cell phone jammer, battery-operated. They got the cheap version for $149. It's just a small radius, or the more expensive portable one for $219. You can, you know, if you're sitting on Metro, sick and tired of people on their cell phones while you're sitting on Metro, just turn on your cell phone jammer. They've got a lower high power cell phone jammer, which is fixed location, means you've got to plug it in. And you can either have low power or high power, depending on the range of jamming that you want. And that's either $195 for the low, $195 for the cheaper version, or $295 for the more expensive version. If you'd like to have an adjustable cell phone jammer, adjustable volume, so you could make an adjustable range, radius within which you would jam cell phones, that runs between $395 to $415. Or if you want to just jam all the cell phones in, say, at the Kennedy Center, you need an ultra high power cell phone jammer, and they've got two versions there, either one for $14.49 or $39.95.
Thanks for giving people an idea.
So here's the deal: you can buy these cell phone jammers, and you know, people have installed them in their conference rooms, for instance. I mean, people, you know, businesses do use them. Now here's the problem: the jammers are illegal in the U.S. Now this is because the cell phone carriers are legally protected by the government because the government has sold certain bandwidth to these cell phone companies. So even though you're sitting in your conference room with your air, with your area, the cell phone companies have been sold the frequencies to that frequency space within your room
by the federal government. Now, does that seem wrong to you?
Yeah. Yes, it does.
I don't like the thought. I can see where you can't, like, go down on in Washington Mall and sit at Washington Monument and jam the cell phones there. But if you're sitting in your own conference room, you really ought to be able to jam cell phone signals there. But it's against the law because the FCC has sold that spectrum to the cell phone companies, and they've given them 100% rights to that spectrum, no matter where it's located. Mm. That just seems wrong. Now, here's the deal. People caught using cell phone jammers can be fined up to $11,000 for their first offense.
Wow.
Now, see, this is why we're giving some warning to this. $11,000 for this first offense. Now, and the FCC has special investigators who have technology to locate jammers. So they drive around looking for jammers, and if they, you know, if they detect that your jammer's there, you may be subject to a fine. And the commission has already prosecuted several U.S. companies for distributing cell phone jammers nationally to their offices to, you know, to block cell phone calls in conference rooms and whatnot.
That is amazing.
Keeping on the cell phone theme.
Yes.
We have the Ten Commandments of cell phone etiquette.
Yes, we do.
That I thought we should review just in case.
I think this is a great idea.
Just in case you're ever on the on an airline and you've got that cell phone burning a hole in your pocket. Okay. Thou shall not subject defenseless others to cell phone conversations. That's the first commandment.
I'll go for that.
Thou shalt not set thy ringer to play La Cucaracha every time thy phone rings.
Yep.
Thou shalt turn thy cell phone off during public performances. Thou shalt not wear more than two wireless devices on thy belt.
Let me go a step further, if I might. Personal pet peeve, wearing any personal communication device of any type on your belt is a huge fashion faux pas.
That's unless you are a nerd.
Well, there's that. Yep. Unless you laugh like this.
Yeah.
Then it's okay to wear it on your belt, if you don't want to be viewed that way,
right.
Don't wear stuff on your belt.
Thou shalt not dial while driving.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a problem. Thou shalt not wear thy eyepiece when thou art not on thy phone.
How about the earpiece?
Yes.
Have you ever heard the earpiece?
The eyepiece.
The earpiece.
Although with the monocle, you can also pick up some signals every now and then.
Yeah, the earpiece.
That's for the video conferencing calls.
Well, that earpiece, you walk around looking like a cyborg with that earpiece.
I keep thinking somebody's got a large bug glued to the side of their head or something.
Thou shalt not speak louder on thy cell phone than thou would on any other phone.
Yes.
Thou shalt not grow too attached to thy cell phone.
You say you don't want to have a civil ceremony with your cell phone, right?
No, no. Okay. Thou shalt not attempt to impress others with thy cell phone. And the tenth commandment is, thou shalt not slam thy cell phone down on a restaurant table just in case it rings.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
You know, yes, mobile phones have had a huge impact, not only in countries like the U.S., where they're replacing landlines, but also in developing countries. Let me give you a sort of a rundown on the impact that they're having in developing countries. Now, this is based on an article that appeared in The Economist, September 24th, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Mobile phones have actually transformed lives in the underdeveloped world. Mobile phones compensate for inadequate infrastructure, such as bad roads, slow postal service, because they allow information to move freely and make markets more efficient, and they have the effect of unleashing entrepreneurship in areas that were otherwise very difficult to be entrepreneurial in. More than 4 billion handsets are now in use worldwide. 75% of them are in the developing world. 75% are in the developing world. You know, I just didn't realize the impact. 4 in 10 people now have a mobile phone in Africa. Mobile money, this is really a big point, is the next big opportunity. In the developing world, corner shops are set up and people can buy vouchers to top up their
calling card. You go in there and you buy a voucher and you can top up your calling card credit, you know, because you basically, you know, you pay for your minutes in advance, and so you go in and you pay money,
right?
And then you put in a code and then you top up your account. Now, mobile money that is used for actually, topping up this account allows small retailers to act like bank branches. So you can take money, you can give it to the local corner shop, and it can top up your phone account.
That's
so it's like
cool.
It's like you're making a deposit in the bank, only you're mm-hmm. depositing your phone account. So that all of a sudden now, people who formerly had no way to have access to banking can use their cell phone account as a bank.
Very cool.
You see? And this is tremendous. So mobile money services have become very important. Now, you can take your cash and you can transfer to somebody. Like, you can send a special text message and you can transfer some of your account to some other phone.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could transfer it to a vendor. So you could buy a Coke and you could make a transfer to pay for the Coke from your mobile phone. So you don't need money, you don't need a bank account, you don't need a checking account. You can transfer money again via text message to other registered users. You can withdraw it by visiting your, you know, local corner shop. So you could go to a corner shop, you could transfer money to them and they could give you cash. So you could actually cash it in. So you can just use it for your banking system. The most successful example of mobile money is M-Pesa, M-P-E-S-A, launched mm-hmm. in 2007 by Safaricom in Kenya. M-Pesa now has nearly 7 million users. Now, Kenya has a total population of 38 million. 7 million of them are using this mobile money.
Mm-hmm.
M-Pesa became the first popular way for young male urban migrants to send money back home to their family. So instead of wiring money home, you send a text message, and bingo, you transfer the money using the cell phone.
That's amazing.
It's now used to pay for everything from school fees to taxis. Taxis can accept it. You can see how this is transforming. Now, there are similar schemes in the Philippines and South Africa. In fact, when I was in Egypt, because my BlackBerry is unlocked, I could buy a GSM phone card. I put the GSM phone card in there, and immediately they wanted to set up my mobile money account
mm-hmm.
so I could use this for mobile money. I mean, it was just built right into the system. So the reason this increases productivity is that rather than spending a day traveling by bus to the nearest bank, a recipient in rural areas can simply spend their time doing more productive things because they can transfer their money locally. Now, why is mobile money not more widespread? Okay, surprise, surprise. The banks don't like it.
Uh-huh.
The banks fear that the mobile operators will be tough competitors.
Right, sure.
I mean, it certainly could be that way.
Could be.
It's also feared by regulators who worry about mobile fraud and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, really, but banks should see this as an opportunity to exploit the telecom's vast retail networks. And the regulators should like to see banks and operators hook up together in order to get the best of both worlds.
I can't believe the show is over
so
fast. Well, listen, we love all your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. And if you ever give Stratford a call and want to go in there and check out their programs, make certain that you tell them that you heard about it on Tech Talk Radio.
And we'll see you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 9, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO to hear from your agency's top tech leader how technology is changing government. Tech Tuesday on 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions.